You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode number 159 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
Hello!
It feels like it's been like a month since we've done a podcast.
It's pretty crazy, and we're back with the Aaron Curry edition.
Oh, wow, fitting for the fact that he was doing some coaching for the Seahawks at OTAs last week. Wow.
He's back. We're back. It's episode 159.
I'm back. I have been to NBA games in two different cities, both conference finals since we last recorded this podcast.
You obviously haven't been to an NBA game in Seattle.
Well, obviously. And spent 4 days in Chicago. That's how long it's been.
And that wasn't even one of the cities that you went to an NBA
game. No, it wasn't. It was two other
cities.
They
haven't been to the conference finals in a while.
A lot more recently than the Sonics. It's not actually been that long. 11, right? 2011?
Oh, they were good. I'm like,
yeah, you did.
I'm like, 1998 wasn't that long ago. They went to the conference finals.
Yeah, they lost to the Heat. The first year that the Heatles were together. I went to Chicago for the NBA Draft Combine, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. And drove up to Milwaukee for the game, first game of that series. Then missed game three, sadly, in Portland because I was still in Chicago, but made it down for game four in the Warriors finishing off the Blazers. You know how long ago we last recorded a podcast? The Blazers still hadn't lost a game in that series
yet. Wait, really? That was before the series?
Yeah,
wow,
we recorded on Monday.
Then.
We recorded before the NBA draft lottery. We didn't know that Zion Williamson was going to be a Pelican.
We're going to talk about that a little bit later. But before then, we have so much to get to as far as toasts, pouring things out.
It's just a very eventful week in Seattle sports, especially for May. A lot is happening.
You know, if we go long enough without recording a podcast, a lot happens in Seattle sports. And somehow the Mariners still are just playing games.
They really just are. But even if we had recorded this like a couple days ago, there still would have been a lot. We've added in the last couple
of days. Well, we have to get into what we're drinking here first, because we've got a lot to get to, even in the toasts section.
Yeah. So from Silver City Brewery.
Our good friends.
Yeah.
They don't know that they're our good friends. You know what?
Sure
just wait. I'm planning a trip out there. Did you know about this?
Yeah, you told us about it on the podcast
last
week.
I'm planning a trip out there. So this is the Silver City Brewery, a limited series mocha milk stout, 8% alcohol by volume. Wow. Watch yourself. Quick stout. It has a picture of an old school milk carton on it, chocolate milk carton, like you would get at your elementary school. Valleyview Elementary probably is where you went.
It's a surprisingly high percentage of the listener.
Here's what they have to say about the quick
stout.
Maybe some
Bowlegs. Wait, do we ever find out where Michael Sawyer went to elementary school?
I don't think he was a Valley View kid.
I don't think so either.
You can tell. I'm joking. Taiyi runs... Well, Valley View runs deeper than Taiyi. But Taiyi runs deep.
In what sense?
Just, you know, the Valley View kids have to stick together.
Okay.
Taiyi kids also have to stick together, but just not as much. Supplemented by a hearty dose of cocoa, freshly roasted coffee, and a hint of vanilla. Quick Stout is a unique style of stout brewed with lactose, a special sugar found in milk that isn't consumable by yeast, resulting in a silky sweetness. So creamy and delicious, you'll almost want to drink it with a straw. We've got some Columbus hops here, which is not a hop I knew existed before this very moment.
Me neither. It's really.
I take back everything I said about Taiyi, by the way. Just delete all that.
Okay. Well, I definitely will. It's really the right time for a stout when it gets over 70 degrees and it's a nice sunny day. You definitely want to go with a stout. But
Mrs. Fantasy Genius is poaching a taste of our drink here.
She approved. She gave a thumbs up. Anytime I see a new Silver City beer that we haven't had, though, that's going to be an automatic for the podcast, I think, even if it's not seasonally appropriate.
Well, it's automatic for the people.
All right, let's get to this. All right, let's start with a toast to Reign FC star Megan Rapinoe, who became the sixth recipient of the Men in Blazers Golden Blazer at their annual...
I thought this was an official title. I thought this, when you were like, Megan Rapinoe got the Golden Blazer, I'm like, wow, that's a real thing.
It is a real thing. There's an actual Golden Blazer that she got.
At what?
Huh?
At a Men in Blazers
Yeah, they do an annual live show where they award someone who's contributed to soccer in America the Golden Blazer. And shouts to Megan Rapinoe.
Better than winning the Golden Boot.
Oh, for sure. No, I don't think it actually is better than that. GFOP, Megan Rapinoe. Shouts to you. All right, next up.
We've got a lot of these to get to, don't worry.
To Husky softball pitcher Gabby Plain, who threw her third no-hitter of the season and the fourth of her career, is the Huskies knocked off Mississippi State to advance to the Super Regionals for the 10th time in the last 11 years. We'll talk more about that later.
Most outings in college softball are no-hitters. It's a shockingly high percentage.
Wow, that is quite milky.
Yeah, the inclusion of lactose doesn't really sound great to me, but...
I mean, I'm tolerant of lactose, so I'm okay with it. All right. Oh, you really like that one.
So stupid.
Next up, Jaden McDaniels announced his commitment to UW.
Hello.
The Federal Way High School star, staying home to play for the Huskies after a protracted wait on his decision.
FWHS runs deep.
Again, we'll have more.
Are they the Eagles?
That sounds right. Again, we will have much
more
on this.
That's definitely not right.
Why?
I don't know.
Again, we'll have much more on this later in the podcast.
I only know about Decatur.
Gators?
Of course.
Yeah. All right, now we shift to pouring some out.
This is we had three toasts and three pouring out.
Yeah.
All right.
It's we're even Steven. First for the Blazers 2019 playoff run. It was a great playoff run. It was much longer than anyone expected.
Cue the Sarah McLachlan.
I mean, I contemplated tweeting during the closing stages of Game 4. Don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. I feel like that's the appropriate sentiment.
R.I.P.
All right, next up. Two longtime Sounders center back, Chad Marshall, who announced his retirement after 16 MLS seasons. Named an all-star into MLS Best 11 four times. Won four Supporters' Shields, three of those with Columbus and one with the Sounders, and two MLS Cups, 2008 in Columbus under the late Ziggy Schmidt, and then 2016 for the Sounders, one of the greatest MLS players of all time.
This was a surprise thing, right?
Yeah, this came out of nowhere. I mean, it didn't come out of nowhere, but to have it mid-season is quite surprising.
Just what is with Seattle and surprise retirements? We're going to talk more about Sue Bird later, but...
Well, that's not a retirement. Let's remain calm here.
Just, you don't know.
What is it with Seattle and injuries?
Be careful is what I'm saying.
Yes. All things are possible.
Watch yourself.
Is this also started with knee surgery? Again, more on this later in the pod. And lastly, on a more serious note, RIP to legendary Husky quarterback Bob Schlereth, who died last week at age 79.
We should toast and pour one out for Bob Schlereth.
Played both ways and ran an option offense as UW went 15-2 in his starts, including wins in the 1960 and 1961 Rose Bowls, where Schlereth was named MVP both times. So, all right, before we get into all the sports talk that we have, I did want to go through
a lot of sports talk this week.
A listener email that we got after last week's episode. It's been a while since we've heard from the listener, so I'm very excited about this. This is from Griffin Pulliam, who says, "This should be a tweet or DM, but I'm weird and only use Twitter for aggregation purposes, so here we go. Anyways, it's been a crazy week, and I didn't get to this week's episode until today. This was sent last Friday, when I put it on in the car while running errands. Normal stuff. But then Tristan's Puget Sound Basketball League was called out as I was thinking about my PSBL team's roster composition for the upcoming week.
Okay.
And then Shoreline's Grinders was called out for this week's sandwich pilgrimage as I drove by it.
Wow.
I finished my errands before the episode, so I have about 20 minutes left. If it somehow ends with an update from the Disc Northwest Ultimate Frisbee High School Mixed Gender Spring League Playoffs, then I'll be too creeped out to continue my long time but heretofore silent content consumption and will delete the Pelton Cast from my podcast app." We had a good run, I guess.
Okay, I was nervous that Griffin was on the team that we had the incident with.
Oh, that's what you
I was nervous that was going. So happy that wasn't the case.
Just kidding. I just needed to share those weird coincidences with someone and knew it wouldn't register with my friends, family, coworkers, or pets. Keep up the good work.
Well, let's toast to Griffin also.
Yeah, thanks. Always appreciate hearing from the listener. And I don't know who in this episode will listen to this driving by Portillo's in Chicago or whatever else we're going to talk about on this week's podcast.
Well, I think for this week, we have to say, fuck it. Talk about hot dogs.
We're going to get right into that there.
Well, what do you want to talk about? We want to talk about Chicago food, right?
Yeah.
And we want to talk about hot dogs. Should we conclude Chicago food and then transition into hot dogs after?
Yeah, let's do that. But we should first explain why we're talking about hot dogs this week. So you didn't, in fact, manage to make it to the aforementioned Grinders. So we didn't have a sandwich to review this week. And you said that you wanted this to be the week that we discussed national sandwich chains because, quote, because it was Memorial Day. To which I responded, yeah, I'd love to throw a sandwich on the barbecue.
Every Memorial Day, I go to Jimmy John's.
And that's when it hit me.
Traditions.
Fuck you. We're talking hot dogs.
Oh, yeah, fuck
this
you.
Week.
Not fuck it. Fuck you. We're talking about hot dogs.
Hot dogs are sandwiches. It is logically infallible.
Okay.
It can't be argued from a logical perspective. Okay, so let's talk about Chicago food. Oh, and also, quickly, Milwaukee food.
Ooh.
I only ate one meal. The only time I spent in Milwaukee was literally in the arena or walking from the parking garage I parked in.
But it has to do with hot dogs.
It does, because I was like, well, where am I going to go in Milwaukee? I have to go to the sausage stand. They have some local sausage maker that does...
In the arena.
In Fiserv Forum, yeah, which is an awesome arena.
Really?
Oh, it's brand new.
I've heard that Milwaukee fans are a little bit crazy, and maybe... I was reading a spicy tweet today that the person since deleted their account.
okay, which that sounds very spicy.
Might be common. Also, Milwaukee fans probably believe that Aaron Rodgers is a good quarterback, so they have some fallacies about them.
Questionable takes.
I feel like the fans of Milwaukee are a pretty good fan base. I feel almost guilty for wanting to steal their team a few years ago.
It was a great crowd. I mean, they were like standing most of the game. And
they're the Milwaukee Bucks, and they're in the Eastern Conference Finals.
I mean,
like, they should be standing the entire game.
I mean, I say this with no disparaging our good friends in the city of Portland, who were also down 3-0 in the series at that point that I attended. They weren't standing the entire game.
You know what? The Blazers are actually, despite the fact that they have not like really won anything, the Blazers are a little bit too used to it.
They have been more consistently successful. It actually had been 1 year longer since they'd been to the conference finals than Milwaukee.
But they'd been far in the playoffs, or at least they'd been a good competitive team for a long time. And for the Bucks, they're the Bucks.
I was explaining, when I was telling our mom that I was going to Milwaukee for this game, I was explaining like how much I respect the Bucks, because the last time, she was like, haven't been good for a long time, have they? And I was like, no, it's 2001 was the last time they got this far. And I was like, I have to respect any team that the last time they were this good, their coach was George Karl and their star player was Ray Allen.
Yes. Okay, so you had sausages in the arena in Milwaukee.
Meh.
They didn't really do anything for you.
Yeah, I mean, the sausage was like arena hot dog size, first off, which was kind of disappointing, instead of like full sausage size.
I mean, we talked about this when we were talking about Portland arena food.
It's not the same.
It's just like everything that you eat gets translated to arena food.
Yeah, I mean, the bar is set much lower.
No matter how good it is, it's just like the people who are making the food in the actual restaurants have a certain level of care that just like arena employees cannot have.
And room.
And volume. Like, yeah, room, I mean, volume.
All sorts of things.
So like, I don't necessarily think that, what was the sausages called?
I want to say Klempner's, but that's just off the top of my head, and I'm not certain about that.
Okay, so you went, then after you were in Milwaukee, you went back to Chicago.
I drove back to Chicago.
Before we talk about Chicago dogs, what else did you eat in Chicago?
Okay, well, weirdly, the Chicago dog was the first meal I ate, if we're going chronologically. But
we're coming back to dogs.
So I still want to talk about that, because I went to Portillo's, and we also had a beef and cheddar on croissant sandwich. And I also had the Italian beef at Al's Italian Beef, which is kind of like the other big chain.
Had to go to Al's.
Oh, you got to go to Al's in Chicago.
Al's in Chicago.
At Portillo's, we ordered online, and I did not think to get it dipped, which was a mistake. You got to get it
what
dipped.
What does dipped mean?
So they have like the juices, like basically the au.
Okay.
And you can either get it kind of poured on your sandwich, or you can get it entirely like dunked in it. So there's just a ton of like basically beef gravy on the sandwich. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely the way to go.
No, that's what you want.
And like the hoagie roll gets like nice and soggy, and
if you can eat it fresh.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was quite good. On Friday, I went to La Pasadita.
Okay, I want to hear about this because, I mean, I had La Pasadita, I would say before...
In 2014.
2014, but before I really was sort of the professor of food studies in Seahawks Twitter U, right? Like, a lot has changed. It's shocking how much can change in 5 years.
So you said at that point that it was the best burrito you'd ever had. Do you still think that's the case? Do you think it's better than Tacos Chuquis? I mean, obviously the Tacos Chuquis baby burrito is a little different.
I don't know. I mean, I'm like, we're talking about memories here.
Right.
You know?
It's a long time
ago. Like, it would be impossible for me to compare at this point.
So I have a lifelong goal of going to as many places in the 538 burrito bracket as I possibly can.
You,
some of them
you
are
have
so
had better burritos than I've had.
I have also, yes, been to the Mission District and had like the actual best burritos in the world.
October 12th, I'm going to be there though.
Yeah. You sure will. So I have been to, this is now the 15th location of the 64 in the burrito bracket that I have
been
to.
You've got a lot to go.
I do.
I mean, numerous of them are closed.
I got to be honest, I don't know about numerous of them. I got to be honest, it's no longer is serious a goal of mine. Like, there were two places.
If you end up in a city, you want to go to the burrito bracket.
There were like two places like a half hour outside of Charlotte or between... Charleston and Charlotte. Like, I could have gone to it on the drive, but I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to Lewis Barbecue instead, actually. I'm pretty sure this is better.
It could have been alone in Charleston.
Whatever.
With a burrito.
No, I wouldn't have been alone in Charleston. I would have been alone somewhere in, like, East North Carolina or North South Carolina.
I'm sorry, 538 burrito bracket, but there are not that good burritos.
Exactly.
In middle of nowhere Charlotte.
So that's why I'm no longer as serious about this goal as I used to be. But Las Pasadena,
they're trying to spread it around. Like, realistically, most of the best burritos in the country are probably in like eight cities.
These are like the mid-major 14 seeds of the burrito bracket. But La Pasadena was this one seed in the burrito bracket. Nate Silver said that it was the spiritual winner of the Chicago burrito bracket,
and
that
he lived in Chicago.
Yeah, so he started a Chicago burrito bracket, never finished it. That was the inspiration for doing it at 538.
Never finished it.
Also the inspiration in many ways for our Seattle.
You know what? Actually, we invented food brackets.
That's true. That's a good point. Anyway, so I have
That's weird that he somehow managed to do a food bracket before us because we technically invented it.
I have now been to 15
of
them.
Take that, Seattle Times.
The top three of them are all in the Mission District. I would say that La Pasadita, I would say it was atop the non-Mission District burritos.
There we go. Okay,
had.
So my memories weren't wrong about this.
No, it was really good. So the burrito, like, the star of this is the carne asada that they have. I mean, it's
I was
outstanding.
Like, it was late at night. I just found La Pasadita. I didn't know it was the number one seed in the burrito bracket, and I was wasted in Chicago.
Were you?
Like, this is exactly the place that you should... And they're open super late, too.
Yes.
This is...
They know who their clientele is. Although they were super busy at lunch. But
we're going to talk about hot dogs later, but like, there's a certain state you need to be in to eat some of these foods.
I kind of expected it would be more like tourists like me trying to go to La Pasadita, but it was really, it just seemed to be all locals and they're getting
tourists
lunch.
Do you think there were in Chicago? Like, the back-to-back show didn't have that many people at it.
You're aware that Chicago is a major tourist destination, right? Like,
there were precisely 200 tourists in all of Chicago for the weekend.
Do you think that, like, Chicago natives are the ones taking the boat tours along the Chicago River? I'm pretty sure I did not get to attend.
Well, you went to the booze cruise, but not the boat tour.
That is accurate.
How much time was spent on boats?
A decent amount. I mean, we spent 3 hours on the cruise. That was was enough.
I don't know. Like, I'm a child of Jan Pelton. So the idea of vacationing to another U.S. city, to me, is just like the most offensive idea.
What?
Right? Jan would never go on a vacation to fucking Chicago, right?
I mean, no, she wouldn't, but she enjoys spending time in beaches. I mean,
you have to go to a tropical locale for it to be a location. If you go to Chicago, it's work.
Okay. That's a take. Of all the takes, that is one of them. She also likes to vacation in Las Vegas, which is, last time I checked, an American city.
But it's not. Like, it's not the
same. Oh, what is it?
You understand what I'm saying?
I don't. No, I really don't, actually. Like, but yes, mom is not
Chicago's not a destination like Vegas is. Vegas is a singularly unique place, and Chicago to Jan is just a city.
Sure. She doesn't seem to have any interest in going to New York.
How many times in her life did we go on vacation to a place as kids that we weren't going to, like, a specific... Like, we're not going to fucking museums, right?
I went to the planetarium in Chicago.
If there's not a Disneyland, a Disney World, a beach, or a casino there...
Or a family reunion in South Dakota. This is really getting inside baseball here.
But what I'm saying to you is I've always viewed other American cities as like, I will end up in these cities for work at some point, right?
I guess that's reasonable.
Like, I'm going to be in Chicago for work at some point. It's just going to happen. I'll be in Atlanta for work. I'll be in Boston for work. Actually, maybe I'll never go to Boston. I'll be in New York for work again. Like, I will be in these places for work. But if I'm vacationing, I'm going to Hawaii.
Okay.
Anyway... You were in Chicago.
Yeah. All right. So the next thing we got to talk about.
Okay. So La Paz Unida was great, though, right?
It was very good.
My memory of this was right.
Yeah. Oh, no. Okay. 100%. The burrito construction itself wasn't ideal. Like, the distribution was not optimal.
But the tortilla is, like, warm and gooey.
See, I didn't notice the tortilla as much as you did, although I'm not as much of a tortilla guy. But the carne asada
in your head.
I mean, maybe
not as much of a tortilla guy?
No, I'm not.
The two most important elements of a burrito are... on one hand, the tortilla, and on the other hand, the protein.
Yes.
Right? That's what makes a burrito.
But I didn't notice the tortilla as being particularly outstanding. So maybe they're doing something differently, or I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
I might have been drunk 5 years ago. Yeah.
You never know. Scholars are divided on the issue. So that Friday night, after we went on this cruise.
I was actually at a Chipotle.
We went to a bar named Timothy O'Toole's. And
are you sure you weren't in Boston still?
I don't know if you're aware of this. Chicago also has a significant Irish American population.
Do they?
Yeah, they dye the river green during St. Patrick's Day.
Green.
That's a thing.
That seems healthy. No, I'm actually aware of this. They also have a large Polish population.
They have many large ethnic populations because it's the third biggest city in the fucking country. Okay. So we get there, and I wasn't gonna have any more to drink, but I discover on the beer list the Xavier McDaniel IPA from Buckle Down Brewing, a beer that I had come across somehow on the internet. I don't remember how anymore. A few months ago.
Wait, say the brewing company again.
Buckle Down.
Where is that based out of?
It's west of Chicago. It's in the Chicago area.
What is Xavier McDaniel? You said Xavier. His name is Xavier.
Fine.
This is not the fucking Musketeers over here. This is the most profane podcast. This is not James Posey over here, right? Okay. His name is Xavier McDaniels. X-Man. We know him.
His name is not McDaniels.
Oh, it's just McDaniel?
Yeah. He's not related to Mrs. Fantasy Genius.
Just wait. We're getting there.
No, yeah.
Cousin Jaden joined the team this week. What is Xavier McDaniels' relationship to this brewing company? Or
it's not. It's completely random. And for a while, they had to stop serving it because of the fact that there was a lawsuit, or at least
two
threatened.
Words.
And then they worked out a deal with Xavier McDaniel, and they were able to bring back the beer. And I was able to get it.
Not Xavier McDaniels.
I don't.
Got to pluralize that. Okay. So you were able to drink this?
Yeah, I was like so excited. It was highlight of the trip.
How was it?
It was really good. It was really good beer, too. I mean, it was very flavorful IPA.
This is like a Mookie Blaylock type situation.
Sort of.
Right? They just think the name Xavier McDaniel is a great name because it's a great name.
Yes, I think that is probably the case.
You really, the Sonics, when you look back on it, it's like Detlef Schrempf is an all-time name.
That's also the name of a Band of Horses song.
Xavier McDaniel is an all-time name.
So right? It's Xavier McDaniels.
So you got to drink the X-Man beer.
Yes.
Where did you go to college?
Where did you see? Wichita State.
Okay. Oh, wow. Shouts to Dame Lillard.
That's not where Damian Lillard went to.
He went to Weber State.
He did. Shouts to Fred Van Vliet, though.
Yeah. Well, he's still alive in the playoffs.
So that was very exciting.
Okay, so
I honestly contemplated, I didn't put in the time to actually go find this, but if I had been able to procure cans, like checking my bag specifically so that I could bring some back to drink on the podcast, sadly did not do that. Okay, other meals in Chicago. Let's see. I think the other meal that we have left unaccounted for at this point. Two more.
We're accounting for these meals.
I'm just trying to go through in my head what we've talked about.
It's a very Nate Duncan way of approaching this conversation. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Chicago native, Nate Duncan.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Harold's Chicken Shack, which was like has become like a very trendy spot in Chicago.
Harold's Chicken Shack.
Yes. Like another NBA writer had tweeted about going there earlier in the week when she was there for the lottery, for example. And like various, like there were three separate groups of us who were in town for the same reason, who all went to the Harold's Chicken Shack
wow.
separately on the same day, weirdly enough. And I gotta say, yeah, the hype is probably a little out of hand. I mean,
wow. It's, what type of chicken are we talking here? What did you get?
I got the like split the half bird 4-piece chicken, with macaroni and cheese as a side.
Are we talking like wings, thighs,
both.
Chicken breasts? Do they do strips?
They do strips. I didn't get those.
Wow. The play is almost always strips.
I know, but I wanted to go with the fried chicken is a little more authentic. And so they do a barbecue type sauce on the chicken, which okay. is interesting.
It's like always on there.
It's not always on there, but yeah, you know, like you have like, but they ask you what you want.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And that didn't do it for you.
I mean, it was perfectly good. I enjoyed the meal and very affordable, but it was like, it's like Ezell's. Like, I don't think if you came to Seattle, I would recommend to anyone that they go to Ezell's as a destination. Mm-hmm. But if you live in Seattle and there's an Ezell's near you, you should absolutely go there for lunch or dinner. It's just not a destination. Make sense?
Yeah.
All right. And then Sunday, I had not at this point had any Chicago-style pizza and needed to rectify that. And of the choices...
Did you have Robert Mays when you were in town?
I actually did, yes.
What was he doing? I actually did.
Well, I asked him whether he was going to the Bucks game, and he wasn't going to that, and I didn't hear back from him after that.
Wow. Mays stood you up.
So my recollection, well, I didn't have a lot of free time. I wasn't really offering to hang out, sadly. My recollection,
you didn't want to get pizza with Mays?
I mean... I thought that I was going to be like eating all my meals with other people. And as it turned out, I ate that meal alone because the group couldn't organize itself until later in the day.
Wow. But, alone in Chicago.
Yes. But my recollection was that that Mays had said that Lou Malnati's was his favorite yes. of the major Chicago
that's
pizza
like chain. Really like one of the well, signature so deep dish
there's
pizza
There's a
places.
Bunch of them. There's like Giordano's, Gino's East. I think it's Gino's East. And then... Pequod's is the other big one, I think.
I have heard of all of these places.
So, but of those, I chose Lou Malnati's and had that for my last meal in Chicago and went with the sausage, which is like the
Did
Lou's
you get? Can
classic.
You get a slice or did you get a whole pizza?
They have personal ones. So oh. like, you know, about the size of a personal pan pizza, but weirdly cut only into two slices instead of four.
And we're talking the sauce on top, right?
Yep.
Like bread, fuckload of cheese,
yep.
sauce on top. Or like meat somewhere in there that you can't yeah. actually find it.
You can find it. I still could have gone for more cheese. I think I was told that Giordano's has even more cheese. That's
nice.
From someone else, another NBA writer who lived in Chicago for a while. So maybe I should have gone to that. I mean, it was solid, not outstanding.
Okay, so then dogs.
Yes. So when we went to Portillo's on the first day I was there, had to order a Chicago dog just to say we did it, even though...
What is a Chicago dog? Describe it to me.
It's got like pickles and maybe a jalapeno on the top, mm-hmm. tomato.
How many of these things did you pick off?
Oh, all of them.
I think that, to you, it's just a hot dog.
Exactly. I think that left like... I think that made,
you're like, yeah, I don't eat that. I don't eat that.
No,
I don't,
exactly.
You don't eat pickles. You don't eat jalapenos. You don't eat tomatoes. Maybe you just don't like food. It
you.
Must be said, how am I criticized for not liking food? And you, I would never pick food off anything. Right? Is there any food that I don't eat? I don't eat sausage because it hurts my stomach. That's
yes.
it. But as far as taste goes, give me... anything and I will eat it.
Yeah. It says something about
you picked up tomatoes
it says
and jalapenos.
Something about your discriminating standards over there.
No! My God! You don't eat tomatoes and pickles and jalapenos? Like, these are very basic foods to eat. And you're... How am I... Okay.
We'll see what the listener has to say. I think
the listener is going to. Are you
kidding me? I think the listener will make fun of me on this.
The listener is going to be on my side. I'm sure Ben B is going to agree with you because I don't think he eats these things either.
We have very similar food tastes. That's why he's a third Belton brother.
He's an actual third Belton brother.
Yes, 100%. Okay. So I think that left with like a. there may have been like a jardinera on the Chicago dog at that point. And it was a very, like, it turns out.
You ate a hot dog with ketchup.
Oh, no, not ketchup. They hate ketchup on the hot dogs, right? That's the thing in Chicago.
Okay. You eat a hot dog with stuffing on it.
Jardinera.
What is jardinera? What is that?
I don't know. It's like. I can't describe it exactly, but it comes on.
You took a. napkin and brushed it all off.
I didn't know that.
You rubbed it all off. It doesn't matter what it is.
But they served like basically it was like an Oscar Mayer level of hot dog on the Chicago.
Wow,
so it was a very disappointing experience.
You think it's so it's a garbage dog.
Yeah,
but the fixins are what matters.
Exactly,
and you hate fixins.
Exactly, it was totally wrong for me.
Wow.
So I'm out on the Chicago dog 100%. Give me the Seattle dog with cream cheese any day.
Yeah, it's a little bit more whitewashed version of a dog. We managed to add cream cheese to it. Like it's the closest thing to adding mayonnaise.
Is it though?
It's the cream cheese is the cousin to mayonnaise.
Just because they're both white?
They're white and creamy.
All right, that's fair.
Okay, so Seattle dogs. Here's the thing. Like the Seattle dog as it is. With the cream cheese, like if you're getting like a street dog, you've got kind of like the toasted crunchy bun, like a street dog that you're getting like a good high level hot dog or sausage, right?
Ideally, both cream cheese and mustard.
Well, I do cream cheese and mayonnaise, cream cheese, mayonnaise, and I just personally cottage cheese on there. I just pull it all together.
What a
plus frosting.
Freudian slip.
Cream cheese plus ketchup is what I would do.
Okay.
But also, I actually shockingly would eat jalapenos. I like onions, sauerkraut, basically any topping that would go on a hot dog.
Meh.
We know that you don't like it. Yeah, we get it. We understand what your palate looks like. I worked at the Seattle Storm. I know you all eat the pepperoni pizza first. But the Seattle dog is a great dog. Like, I mean, Chicago has obviously done good things for the hot dog, but you need the combination of you need a good dog plus you need good fixins.
You need good condiments. I don't know if you need good fixins.
Or whatever. So I was, you were like, fuck you, we're talking about hot dogs. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll look up like the best hot dogs in the area for lunch. When I was at work, and I was like, oh, Monster Dogs, that's cool. That seems close. 4.5 stars on Yelp, right? So I'm looking at the hours.
Okay.
Monday closed. Tuesday closed. Wednesday, get this, closed. Thursday closed. Friday, 8:30 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. Saturday, 8:30 p.m. to 2:30 a.m. Sunday, closed.
Wow, they know their clientele.
I'm like, this is the top-rated hot dog that is walkable for me. I'm like, these are great-looking hot dogs, but the times that you can get hot dogs are literally 8:30 p.m. to 2:30 a.m., and that's where most of the good hot dogs are because you can't be like, wow, there's this great hot dog place nearby.
Oh, man.
Right?
Is the Frankfurter still around? They've still got a place on the waterfront, right?
I've never eaten a Frankfurter before.
You must have had a Frankfurter in the center house. Come on.
In the what?
In the center house before it went reverted to the armory.
Never. I always ate Mod Pizza before they were even there.
Wow.
Sometimes
you didn't even go to Pizza Haven? You had to have gone to Pizza Haven.
I never once went to Pizza Haven. I worked for probably years.
No, but
in
when we
Seattle
were kids.
Center. When we were kids, Jana wouldn't let us eat at Pizza Haven or the Frankfurter.
I suppose probably not.
God, are you kidding me? Next thing, we're going to vacation in Detroit.
So cold in the dew. The Frankfurter does still exist, yes.
It's actually still there, right?
It's on. I think the only location now is on the waterfront.
Oh.
Yes.
But it's like in Seattle, the places that you can get hot dogs are A, late at night outside of a music venue.
Yes.
Chop Suey and or Numo's and probably in Belltown. B, you could get Monster Dogs, which I'm sure is pretty close to the Crocodile because that's in Belltown. outside of a sporting event,
yes,
most notably a baseball game, you can get hot dogs from a stand, or option four,
Costco.
At Costco, yeah. Right? $1.50 hot dog plus soda. There's still probably no better deal in all of food.
When will there become a better deal? The deals are getting worse. The Costco hot dog stays the same price always.
I mean, like, inflation keeps happening, and that Costco hot dog never goes up.
I mean, it's nice to know that there are some things you can rely on in life. And the $1.50 Costco hot dog is one of them. It turns out, sadly, though, the $1.50 Costco Polish is not one of those things you can rely on in life.
Did you ever do the Polish?
A few times. I tried it. I did not like it as much.
So here's what I heard the Polish was. They said this. They said, it is the same as a Costco hot dog, just with pepper in it. I think that is literally the only difference.
Makes sense to me.
I think it's just a mental thing. You're like, oh, that's a Polish.
Well, peppers sometimes don't sit well with me, so it wouldn't surprise me if I digested that worse than the...
We're talking about pepper, not peppers.
Oh, like, oh.
Pepper.
Oh.
Like ground from the salt shaker. Ground, not the salt shaker, the pepper shaker. From Trader Joe's, though, right? Ground up peppercorns. That's the only difference between the Costco Polish and the Costco hot dog.
Huh. So when we discussed this on Twitter at one point, vastly preferred the Costco Polish and was upset about their demise.
Well, they've gone the way of the Sonics.
So they're also never coming back.
I mean, they probably aren't. Realistically, do you think the Polish is coming back? Once it's gone, it's gone. They just have hot dogs.
To me, the problem with the Costco hot dog is this.
God. What, you have to put too many things on it? You can put relish on it?
It ruins the concept of any other hot dog because you're like, this should be $1.50 and I should get a drink with it. And that's never the case with other hot dogs.
I sort of agree with you. But also, when you're in the state of ordering a food or ordering a hot dog like this monster dog that's only available from 8:30 p.m. on Friday to 2:30 a.m. on Friday or Saturday, you're not all that concerned with the price.
That's very fair. I mean,
if it's $5, I'm just like, whatever. Like, the amount of drinks that I've had when I'm at the point that I'm eating that meal leads me to not care what the price is.
I don't feel like I've had that much street meat in my life.
Wow.
I feel like maybe the famous Cousin Katie's husband's bachelor party, possibly at that.
We definitely had hot dogs.
Wait, you guys did. I had.
You didn't have a hot dog?
I don't think I did because of the fact that they had like brought me extra mashed potatoes at dinner.
You didn't have a giant bowl of mashed potatoes.
I was very full from that and later threw up.
Did you throw up?
Oh, I did.
Was that your first ever time? That was your second ever time throwing up from drinking. Time number one was Sean Kemp. Sean Kemp made you throw up from drinking. Time number two was at Ben's bachelor party.
I don't know the chronology of those two events. It may have been reversed.
Have you ever thrown up from drinking any other time?
There was some dry heaving over the weekend.
Wow! Ladies and gentlemen, this weekend, the booze cruise, did Xavier McDaniel get you?
That plus a subsequent shot.
Wichita State in the house. What was the shot of? Was it, why can't I think of the Chicago liqueur?
No.
Oh my God, what is it called?
I think it was Jameson, but I gotta be
honest. They do drink a lot of Jameson in Chicago.
My memory is a little hazy at that point of the evening.
Wow, what is the liqueur from Chicago that everybody hates? Oh my God, you know what I'm talking about. You don't know anything about Chicago?
I guess I don't.
Oh, it's called Malort.
Oh, yes.
I can't believe you went to Chicago and didn't have Malort.
I did not have Malort.
It's literally actually the only drink there.
Apparently it's not. Xavier McDaniel IPA is also there.
Xavier McDaniel. Okay, so that was Chicago.
Yeah, and that was hot dogs. We have anything else to say about hot dogs?
I just haven't had that many hot dogs. Costco hot dog, if I have to give it a rating, perfect 100. Right? Because as it is the... There's never a moment where I'm like, ugh, I have to have a Costco hot dog for $1.50.
I would say I don't have very many Costco hot dogs these days for two reasons.
Because of that photo of you playing Cranium? People will get that reference later.
That's true. You have to listen all the way to the end to get that reference. Number one is health. And number two, for efficiency reasons, is I did earlier today, I only go to Costco at 9 a.m.
You still get the hot dog!
You know, the food court doesn't even open until 9:30 a.m.
You wait.
I don't.
You're a monster. There's literally no other reason to go to Costco other than to get the hot dog. I'm always like, maybe I should hit up Costco today. I don't actually want the items from Costco. I don't need bulk non-sandwiches. I don't need that. All I need is a $1.50 hot dog. That's why I want to go there.
I mean, I used to sometimes go meet a friend and we'd go to Costco specifically for lunch. We drive from like downtown to the 4th Avenue Costco just for lunch.
A specific friend or just a friend?
No,
it's bury the hatchet or bury a friend here.
A specific friend. John Noage. That reference is going to make sense to maybe one of the listeners. Yeah.
Shouts to John Noage. Did he eat a hot dog too?
Probably. I don't really remember.
Seems
this
like is a chicken bake kind of guy to me.
Over a decade ago.
I am so disappointed in you that you don't.
Wait, which part again?
No, the part about going to Costco and not waiting for the food court to open and getting a hot dog. You have to get a slice of pizza and a hot dog. It's literally the perfect meal.
At 9:30 a.m.
I don't care the time. The time does not matter.
You can reheat the Costco hot dog. It preserves decently.
You can eat it at 9 a.m. We should probably skip the Blazers, right? We've already been talking for like 3 hours.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, the Blazers season ended. They lost. They got swept by the Warriors.
Oh, you know what we need to do a toast to? I've already drank all my drinks.
Myers legend.
Myers legend. What a performance from him in game 3 and then particularly game 4. And then coming to the podium sleeveless and just like delivering a full-on Myers, stopping the press conference to deliver some comments about how great Damian Lillard was in the series and watching film and seeing all the attention he was drawing. Like, Myers was in full effect. It was amazing.
That's actually pretty cool that he defended Dame. Because Dame, I feel like, was taking a lot of heat in the series. And like
some. I don't know if a lot.
Just realistically, if you have two people defending you, it's very... We've seen this throughout the playoffs.
Especially when your teammates, besides Myers Leonard, are not necessarily making the open shots created.
There's basically, this is the most that I've ever watched basketball, maybe in my entire life. Like, this time period that we're currently in, between watching every Blazers game and watching a lot of the other games, I don't think, and it makes me respect what LeBron did so much more, because LeBron was unguardable no matter what, for a long time.
Yeah, it helps to be 6'8" in LeBron's athleticism.
But, like, Giannis is big, and look, Giannis is guardable. We've learned that Giannis is, granted, that's Kawhi Leonard guardable. He's Kawhi Leonard guardable.
He also may seem less guardable by the end of game 5.
We'll see.
By the time you listen to this.
But at this moment, looking at it, the only, Steph Curry is unguardable. But Steph Curry is not unguardable because of anything Steph Curry does. If he was being guarded by two players, he would be guardable also. And that's why I think that, Dame's not getting a lot of heat, but yeah, Dame didn't seem like Dame had a great series, but they worked very hard to take Dame out of the series.
Yeah, I agree.
So it's just a difficult thing. Like, really, I think there are very few players in the history of the NBA who can score at that high of a level. Like, I think there are a few players. Like, I think KD is maybe capable of it because if he has a unique combination of shooting ability and size, where he can basically create a shot no matter what.
Yes.
I think that LeBron was able to. I'm sure that MJ was able to, which is like, now I sort of wonder what the defenses looked like back then, because I don't have a lot of memories of him being like double and triple teamed.
Well, you couldn't like stunt over at someone back then under the illegal defense rules.
Defend behind them.
No, you had to either like full double them or stay at home. Now, the Sonics found some creative ways to skirt those rules under George Karl.
You're saying you couldn't have like a big man sort of like
camped out in the paint.
Yeah, because that would have been illegal defense.
Yes.
In that era. Because that's the thing that they do to Dame so much, where it's like, hey, you get by this first defender, there's going to be another person waiting for you, and they're going to trap you.
Well, when the Blazers were running side pick and roll, which was really important for them in the Denver series, Golden State would literally bring over a third defender in addition to the two who were involved in the ball screen, just to stop that action and leave two defenders on the weak side to defend the three Portland shooters, which, again, would be very illegal under the illegal defense rules.
Interesting.
But they could do that because the Portland shooters were relatively non-threatening.
Well, I mean, they just missed shots. So, I don't know.
Like, and were relatively non-threatening.
It's like you're talking about the Warriors offense, the best basketball team maybe of all time, and the Portland Trailblazers. Like, Portland achieved...
Without Yusuf Nurkic, with Rodney Hood at far less than full strength.
If we're being honest here, though, Yusuf Nurkic, they made it as far as they could have, irrelevant of who was on the team.
Yeah.
Irrelevant of who's healthy.
Yeah.
Nurk being there would not have made that big of a difference. Maybe they win one game. They were losing the series no matter what. That Warriors team... When they got hot and were scoring the way that they wanted to score, they're unstoppable.
And also the reason the Blazers were able to get to the conference finals is because of the fact that they won the season finale by coming back from a 28-point deficit against Sacramento so that they could be the 3 seed. Because if they had been the 4 seed, you know, who knows what would have happened in that first-round series against Utah. But then they're playing the Warriors in the second round,
yeah,
and they're not getting this far.
Most importantly, though, they beat the Thunder 4-1. And they really, I don't want to say that they exposed the Thunder, but they beat the Thunder.
Once Andrea Robertson gets back, you just watch.
Just wait. Faux Thunder. Oh,
by the way, we have some
Andre Robertson.
We have some Thunder talk coming.
Oh, God, do we? About Matisse Thybulle?
We do.
Oh, God. Anyway, what I'm saying is that the Blazers overachieved in this playoffs.
It was a great playoff run.
They beat a team that they were the lower seed then, which so far is the only series in the playoffs that that's happened, right?
That is accurate.
The Blazers are the only team. Really, like, people talk about how crazy things are in these NBA playoffs, but it's been chalk more or less all the way.
Yes, there have been 13 concluded series. Of those, the higher seed has won 12.
And so you're going to get exposed when you play a better team. That's the way it goes in an NBA series. And I think the Blazers had an incredible season and an incredible playoffs. And the fact that they were able to beat the Thunder 4-1, do the city of Seattle a solid, knock them out, and really sort of expose a lot of their flaws.
Get Jake one on the bandwagon.
That's all we really care about. They locked down a lot of the bandwagon. I mean, like,
by the way,
Katie didn't care about the Blazers, and her photo on Twitter is Dame Lillard.
Yes. By the way, check out
Katie and Jake one. Equally successful rap producers.
Jake One did a podcast with our friend Big Waz on the BOM feed. So check that out after you finish listening to all 3 hours of this podcast.
Anyway, so I feel like we have to toast to the Blazers. I know we poured one out to the Blazers, but we have to toast them because they did a lot of good for the city of Seattle this season and this playoffs. And they were fun.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Dame Lillard is a fun player to cheer for no matter what happens.
So that was a lot of us not talking about the Blazers.
It wasn't that much. It could have been a lot more.
On to Seattle sports. We'll start with a brief update on the NHL Seattle Group. In a presentation to the Seattle City Council on Monday, the NHL Seattle Group said groundbreaking on their training facility is likely in January, with a target opening date of April or May of 2021 ahead of their inaugural season.
And where is that training facility going to be?
At Northgate.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So they'll also have ice rinks for use by local hockey teams, etc.
Okay, so since a lot of people talked about this on Twitter, this is our first time talking post-NBA draft lottery, a lottery where you would consider probably the two teams who are very unlikely but most likely to move to Seattle, New Orleans, and Memphis, ending up with the number one and number two picks in the draft, a little reminiscent of the KD and Oden lottery.
Yes, historical rivalries, New Orleans and Memphis.
I mean, they're like probably distance-wise, they're probably the two closest teams there, right?
Probably not. I guess Brooklyn wasn't in the lottery.
I could never vacation to them.
New Orleans?
Jan won't let me. Anyway,
have you considered not trying to do whatever your mom would do when vacationing? Have you considered that?
When have you ever vacationed to an American city? Never.
I went to LA last summer.
Just for vacation?
Yeah.
LA doesn't count.
I
I feel like only the Midwest and Northeast and Southeast.
Okay, Kansas City. I've been to Kansas City to hang out with some friends of mine. So there you go.
We were all judging you pretty hard.
Great barbecue.
No, what? I want to go to Kansas City.
You know that my only criteria for going to a city is how good the food is.
There's good food in every city. I'm the person who wants to vacation to Charleston.
There's better food in some cities than others. I mean, Charleston does have beaches, I think. Sort of.
Could care less. I'll be alone at the bar at the barbecue. But anyway, what do you think this draft lottery meant for NBA relocation to Seattle?
Well, it's not great. I mean, I think New Orleans, it's a lot more meaningful than Memphis because there's obviously such a gap between Zion Williamson as a prospect and anyone else in this year's draft. I mean, I think that Ja Morant is the clear number two prospect. And he's a, you know, now that the Grizzlies will likely trade Mike Conley.
They're drafting Ja number two.
They seem to have made that pretty clear. I talked to some the Omari Sankofa, the Athletics beat writer for the Grizzlies,
again.
And he said that there's a lot of local excitement about the Ja Morant selection. I mean, he played at Murray State, which is not too far from there, I guess. So, relative to New Orleans.
But most importantly is that New Orleans pick was Zion.
It means Memphis is going probably into a full-on rebuild. Like, it takes a long time to win with a rookie point guard. So it'll be interesting to see how the fan base handles that.
Like, yes, for Memphis, if we're talking about them, the time it will take for Ja Morant to get to the point where he is as good as Mike Conley is will take years.
Yes.
They already have a very good player at that position. I understand that youth can sort of invigorate a fan base, but like the Grizzlies are going to be bad.
Yeah, they probably are. Yeah.
Okay, so what about New Orleans?
Oh, I mean, you know, I mean, they sold 3,500 season tickets supposedly in the first, you know, day after the lottery announcement. Like, Zion mania is a real thing, and this is a city that needed something to get excited about with the likelihood of an Anthony Davis trade. So. It turns out, by the way, Murray State is in Kentucky, not in Tennessee. I was wrong about that one.
That's some podcast geography.
That sure is some podcast geography.
It's good that you were wrong about that. Just part of the hashtag brand. Murray State's in Kentucky, huh?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably would have guessed it was in Ohio.
It had to be one of Tennessee, Kentucky, or Ohio. Those were the only possibilities. Well, it's only 3 hours away, so it's not much farther away than Seattle and Portland. So I stand by that. He's a local product.
I'm trying to think of who the Portland product that we would have been excited about the Sonics having.
Terrence Jones.
Yeah. No, like Portland College product.
Oh. Yeah, I guess because he's not actually from
there.
They
were all pretty high-level Frisbee players.
Luke would know.
anyway, so this is a negative.
Yeah, obviously.
And things I would say are...
I mean, I just don't think I have any unique insight to add here. Yeah.
Well, the instant reaction seemed to be that people were excited about it. People were like, oh, Zion's coming to Seattle. And I was like,
Right.
Nobody's coming to Seattle. B, Zion's not coming to Seattle.
When the team that has no fan base, I'm sorry, has a limited fan base, has limited fan excitement, gets the single most exciting prospect in the draft, and probably, like I think Luka's a great prospect and all, but like Zion's a way more exciting prospect than him. He's a more exciting prospect probably even than Anthony Davis in many ways. Like,
can we just take a step back here and
he's
say
probably
that
the most exciting prospect, I would say, since LeBron.
I this is as an NBA fan. Zion makes me nervous. Like,
what? We don't have time to talk about this.
Okay, fine. We don't have time to talk about it. Whatever. But I'm just saying the hype around Zion, his game doesn't seem like it's going to translate that well to the NBA. And it especially doesn't seem like it's going to translate that well to sort of like leading a team. If they trade Anthony Davis, I know Drew Holiday is good or whatever, but like he's going to be 1/20th what Anthony Davis is.
What, 20th?
If that. Anthony Davis is one of the best players in the league.
I don't know if you're aware of this. Anthony Davis is often injured.
Zion missed a chunk of time in his one season in college.
Yes. I mean, if you gave me If we had to put an over-under for next year on the relative wins above replacement player for Anthony Davis and Zion Williamson,
yes,
where would you set the line? Like, how many multiples?
How many multiples of wins will Anthony Davis be worth over Zion?
Yeah.
Like, double.
You said he was 120th. That's 5%. That's 20 times.
Probably more. Like, Anthony Davis is worth, what, like 10 wins more?
I mean, a healthy Anthony Davis is probably worth close to 20.
Like, realistically, what do you think Zion, maybe 5?
Yeah, as a rookie. Yeah, I think.
How many years do you think it'll take for Zion to get to the point that I think these 3,500 season ticket holders could go away very quickly. Like, when they realize that...
But he's fun to watch. Have you ever watched Zion Williamson play basketball in your life?
Watching Zion Williams play basketball, that was also in college. The amount that he's going to be physically imposing in the NBA is going to be very different.
You know what it was in college? It was him with RJ Barrett and Trey Jones spacing the floor for him. Whenever he has real, actual NBA players shooting threes.
Who?
Drew? Whoever they sign at point guard, they're going to have $20 million to go out and sign a starting point guard? Whoever they get for Anthony Davis, I'm sure Jason Tatum.
They're not trading him to the Celtics.
This is a really aggressively bad take on your
part. It's not an aggressively bad take. I'm nervous about it. I want Zion to be good, but I watch Zion. I'm like, that seems like a very good college. That seems like an extremely good college player and an okay NBA player.
I mean, he had probably the single greatest freshman season in college basketball history. But okay.
Okay. So what is Anthony Davis's highest, like, war or whatever you would call it ever?
I mean, somewhere around 20.
I will make a bet with you that Zion Williamson in his first 5 years never reaches the level that Anthony Davis got to.
I don't know why you're making this comparison. The point is not that Zion Williamson is going to be better than Anthony
Davis. The point is that they had Anthony Davis and they were never that good. Yeah. The best they ever were was an 8 seed.
Can I let you in a little fun fact about Anthony Davis?
What?
He is one of the most squandered talents in NBA history.
Welcome to squandered talent number 2.
Oh, here. Hey.
You're talking about him. Oh, he's going to kick it out to Etan Moore. Oh, he didn't have RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish, but he's got Etan Moore now. Woo!
First off, it's Etan. Second off, they hired a new general manager. They fired Del Demps, the general manager who oversaw the squandering of Anthony Davis, and replaced him with David Griffin, the architect of the Cavaliers championship team, who already has made massive improvements in their infrastructure, including hiring an actual NBA athletic training staff instead of having the Saints rejects come over and be their athletic training staff.
Fuck Pelicans. I mean, I understand that point and agree with you, but it takes a long time to change the course of an NBA team.
But also, they're going to get all the talent that they get in a trade for Anthony Davis.
The Pelicans are going to miss the playoffs next year.
Sure. That's not the point. The point is that they're going to be excited about the future. The Sonics lost 62 games Kevin Durant's rookie year. Do you think that was like a bad thing?
And then the team moved.
Yeah, because they were already on the...
If they win more games, the chances of them staying in Seattle are probably higher.
No, because guess what? They were already bought by a businessman from Oklahoma City. You know who the Pelicans are owned by? A person from New Orleans who's investing great amounts into the organization in an effort to modernize them. The Pelicans are not going anywhere.
Now, I agree with you. A team will never come to Seattle.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. At least we can agree on that. Look, I want Zion to be good. That's what I'm saying. I want Zion to be a good player. I'm so excited about the prospects of it. I'm just nervous. I don't care about Seattle. I know that Zion is not playing in Seattle. We have a much better chance of seeing Ja Morant than we do Zion.
Drink your Tecate and chill out.
I need a hot dog. Anyway.
Costco is enough. Let's talk about the Seattle Sounders.
That's like maybe the most heated we've got.
We're skipping M's hot takes this week. It's just... I don't know what there is to say about
this end maybe every week.
And instead, we've decided to devote 15 minutes to talking about the New Orleans Pelicans.
And this is the content people want.
The Sounders got a 2-1 win last Wednesday at home against Orlando City SC, and then drew 0-0 on Saturday at Philadelphia Union, leaving them with 26 points, second in the Western Conference. Sounders really controlled play in that home match against Orlando City, taking a 2-0 lead behind Real Ruiz Diaz, his first goal in many games after he missed time due to injury, and Henwala Buana before Orlando City pulled one back relatively late. The Sounders were pretty lucky to get the draw that they did at Philadelphia against the East's top team. had a disadvantage of 2.5 to 0.9 in terms of non-shot expected goals, according to the 538 Soccer Power Index model. So, you know, basically the Union controlled the run of play there, but did not manage to put in a goal. The trip to Philadelphia started a 4-game road trip for the Sounders.
Is there a rodeo in town? Like, what the hell?
I don't know why it's happening. Who won't play at home again until June 29th, following an extended international break.
I got so excited about that rodeo reference. I started laughing at myself before.
Yeah. There's an extended international break around the start of the CONCACAF Gold Cup coming up in June. So the Sounders will continue this road trip on Sunday at Sporting Kansas City, who is tied for 10th in the West with 1 point per match so far. But this is a tougher match than that would kind of imply. Sporting KC, just one loss so far in 6 home games, 2-1-3, but 5th in the 538 Soccer Power Index. They have an even a neutral goal differential this season and a +3 expected goal differential, according to American Soccer Analysis, which puts them right in the mix in the Western Conference. The Sounders will be without Jordan Morris, who left the Orlando City game due to a mild hamstring strain, should get back Gustav Svensson from injury, and may get back Victor Rodriguez.
Interesting.
But, of course, they will not have Chad Marshall after his sudden retirement. Marshall had played two of the last 7 matches due to right knee inflammation in the wake of undergoing knee surgery after being injured against the Timbers in the playoff match last year. You know, when he went down in that game, I was in the stands for that one, and it looked like a really serious knee injury. Then it seemed kind of relieved that, okay, it's just a meniscus injury. He has to have knee surgery. He'll be out for this series, but back next year. But kind of the lingering effects of that, he was told it was chronic and degenerative, and you know, that's what led to his decision to retire.
I mean, like, the Chad Marshall's going to be difficult to replace.
For sure. I mean,
like, he's the anchor of this back line for the Sounders. And for years.
As recently as last year, maybe even as recently as the LAFC game, although that partially reflects just how awesome LAFC is. Like, anytime Chad Marshall was out of the lineup, the Sounders defense just got incredibly leaky because he was, you know, such a reliable defender.
And I feel like cleaned up a lot of issues exactly. That happened. So what are they going to do to replace Chad Marshall?
So Roman Torres has stepped in, and he's obviously got a lot of experience as a starter, was in that role alongside Marshall at the beginning of last year before Kim Keehee took his job. But also the Sounders, you'll recall, at the same time they signed Jovan Jones before the end of that transfer window, also signed Ecuadorian center back Javier Arriaga. And he's expected to arrive in Seattle on Thursday and start training with the team.
And is he a starting caliber player coming over?
So he's a relatively younger player. You know, Brian Schmetzer has said he's our long-term option at center back. And, you know, we knew that the Sounders were going to need that because, you know, Marshall was 34.
Is he a bigger player? Because Jovan Jones is somebody who I consider always outside.
Yeah.
Whereas Chad Marshall and Roman Torres are sort of bigger anchoring center back type players.
Yeah, I mean, he's a center back.
Okay.
And a very promising one. I mean, not as experienced as Chad Marshall. You're going to lose a great deal there. Listed at 6'1", by the way.
All right.
So, not as big as Chad Marshall, but, you know, a reasonable size for center back. So, yeah, we'll see how long it takes him to get adjusted to the Sounders in MLS, but at some point, you know, I'd expect him to take over there.
And so he's going to arrive with the team this week.
Yes.
Could be playing relatively soon, or
we'll see how much time he needs to get up to speed. The Sounders have a pair of matches next week, so a bit of a crowded schedule leading into this international break.
So do we think this Sounders season that started off so promising obviously has sort of gone the other way over the last few weeks?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, they've come back to earth, but, you know, other than LAFC, no one else is running away from them in the Western Conference. Like, they're probably not going to be able to get the bye.
Anchoring defensive player here.
But they've played without him, again, 5 of the last 7 matches. And, yeah, there was a little bit of a rough stretch, but that also coincided with your top 2 strikers being injured at the same time. So that was not ideal, I would say.
So we shouldn't expect the team to be all that different.
They're definitely not as good, but I don't think it devastates their season. Okay. I don't think it means anything is out of their reach now.
Okay.
More injury news. Reign FC earned their first win of the season by a 2-1 final over Sky Blue FC on Saturday at Cheney Stadium, getting the winning goal from Jody Taylor.
How long have they been playing at Cheney Stadium?
This year is the first year.
Okay.
We talked about it in the pod.
Yeah.
Oh, you got it.
I remember that.
getting the winning goal from Jody Taylor in the 78th minute.
I was at Memorial Stadium for this one.
So the injury here, Reign FC goalkeeper Michelle Betos suffered an injury in stoppage time, and with the team out of substitutions, midfielder Morgan Andrews was forced to finish the game in goal, coming up with a stop on a cross, not technically a save, but to help preserve that 2-1 win. But bad news for Betos, who suffered a season-ending Achilles rupture. So that's a bummer.
Okay.
In further injury news... We move on to the Seattle Storm, who just the season from hell continued, starting with, of course, with Breanna Stewart's Achilles injury. In a much more serious real-life matter, Coach Dan Hughes being diagnosed with cancer and undergoing surgery to remove a cancerous tumor. And then most recently, on Tuesday, announced that Sue Bird will undergo arthroscopic surgery to remove a bone fragment from her left knee and be sidelined for the start of the season. This is the latest in a long list of left knee surgeries for Sue Bird, who originally tore her ACL in the knee in 1998 as a freshman at UConn. She had microfracture surgery on it after the 2003 season.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, she's played 16 years after having microfracture knee surgery. Sue Bird is amazing. She had a similar surgery to remove bone fragments during the middle of the year in 2007 and missed just 2 weeks on that one. And then had a cyst removed in 2013, which led to her missing that entire season.
I mean, the reality is you're talking about the most recent of these seasons was 6 years ago, right? Sue Bird is not a young player at this point.
No.
Like, this injury could be a long-term injury.
I mean, we'll see. It depends on how the surgery goes. I mean, there's... I believe Hype Post Hoops originally, when they broke this news ahead of the Storm's press release, said an 8 to 10 week timetable. Sue Bird on Twitter said, "Hey, a leak with some misinformation. We've made it. It's a leak, basically. But the true part is that I'm undergoing the surgery." So I don't know if they necessarily know until they actually go in there and remove the fragment how long it's going to take, Sue. But
what is the misinformation is the timeline?
I think so. That's my understanding.
Because it was too long?
I mean, I'm just not even sure there is a timetable. Now, like I said, when she had a bone chip removed previously, it was only a 2 week injury. She was back pretty quickly.
That would be wishful thinking.
I think this is a more serious bone fragment. At that point, she was able still to play through it. In this case, you know, she's been experiencing pain basically every time she's tried to play.
Okay. So you're talking about a Storm team that is going to be starting this season as defending champions without Sue Bird, without Breanna Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not ideal. It's a real not a way to defend your championship. So this is going to put a lot of pressure on Jordan Canada, who has been running the team throughout much of training camp, started both preseason games, had a really nice game down in L.A. in her hometown in their second preseason game. And, you know, she played capably off the bench as a rookie, gave the Storm more consistency than they've had from the backup point guard spot in a long time. And had a few opportunities to start when Sue Bird sat out games for rest, but this is a huge jump now. You know, she's going to be at the controls of the offense, and that's going to be. I think this will be good for her long term development, but there's going to be some growing pains, I'm sure.
Give me a percentage chance of the Storm making the playoffs right now.
So 8 teams out of 12 in the league make it.
Okay, so it's still pretty high.
I would say like 20 to 25.
Whoa!
I mean, we'll see how long the timetable is, but...
Only 20 to 25% considering the fact that 75% of the teams make the playoffs?
Yep. I mean, the big issue to me here is, like, the Storm's shooting has been badly compromised. Like, they were a really elite shooting team last year, but Sue Bird is obviously a huge part of that. Breanna Stewart's ability to stretch the floor as a power forward is a big part of that. You take the
And Breanna Stewart's done for the year?
Yeah. Yeah, ruptured Achilles. as we discussed on this podcast, when she was first injured, they did place her on the suspended list, which clears the 12th roster spot for them. So far, second-round pick Anreal Howard is on the roster. We'll see if they want to pick up a point guard who gets waived by another team just to have more depth at the position, where they don't really have another true point guard behind Jordan Canada now with Bird sidelined. Shavonte Zellis, one of the reasons they signed her coming into the season was to play, you know, to be a third option at point guard, but you know, for an extended stretch, they might want someone else on the roster who is a natural ball handler.
And they begin the season on Saturday?
Yes.
Is that in Seattle?
It is. Well, it's in Everett.
Seattle-ish.
Yeah, one of the, I believe, five or six games they'll be playing at Angel of the Winds Casino Arena in Everett.
Wow.
With the bulk of the schedule at Heck Ed.
And you're going to be there?
I am going to be there. They're taking on the Phoenix Mercury in a rematch of last year's thrilling five-game semifinals that will not feature Sue Bird, Breanna Stewart, or Diana Taurasi, who underwent back surgery a few weeks ago before the start of training camp and is expected to miss the first half of the season, including both Phoenix trips to Seattle.
Wow, you're missing my birthday for that.
I mean, I'll still be in the city. I'm not vacationing in Chicago on this one. The Storm also probably... for the opener, will be without forwards Alicia Clark and Sammy Whitcomb, who are completing their final series in France with Game 5 against, they play on opposite teams against each other, scheduled for Thursday. So even if they manage to make it back in time to just be at the ring ceremony on Saturday, I don't think they're going to be able to play on that short of a turnaround coming all the
way. So this is going to be a pretty limited Storm roster.
Yeah, it's going
to
be
a
makeshift roster at best, I would say. So that would leave them... you know, even with Stewie on the suspended list, if none of those, if Clark and Sammy Whitcomb are unable to play, they'd have 9 players in uniform for the opener. So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting season for the Storm. I think it is a very real possibility that things could, like one of the things the High Post Hoops article mentioned is that Sue just might end up sitting out the season. And, you know, I think if things start...
that feels like retiring to me.
I mean,
how old is Sue Bird?
38. I mean,
let it be known I'm giving you a knowing look of like when a 38-year-old sits out for a season.
I mean, I'm sure I could come up with an example if I looked for this, but part of the reason like might be strategic, because if you know you're not going to make the playoffs, like why are you burning any, you know, why are you risking bringing Sue Bird back at that point? Why not play Jordan Canada, get her the experience this year? Get a lottery pick next year to add to the roster. You'd also add, you know, Ezie Meghbogor, this year's first-round pick, who is not coming over to join the team. Like, you would be an opportunity to really kind of reload for 2020. And, you know, whether it's one last run with Sue, either way, you know, you'd be looking at a much more formidable roster in 2020.
Yep. I mean, I agree with you, but you're also talking about a situation where Breanna Stewart will be back, but you're talking about a 39-year-old point guard.
I mean, David Robinson...
coming off a season-long injury.
David Robinson wasn't that old at that point, but, you know, I think that there could be some parallels sort of to that season that, you know, I mean, not that they're likely to win the lottery, but the season that landed San Antonio Duncan when Robinson missed most of
the
season.
They've already won the lottery.
Twice in a row.
Interesting.
At that point, David Robinson was 31. So, Ted Bickner.
Let it be known that I'm giving you a knowing look again about the age difference between 31 and 39.
Look, this is also part of why everyone always asks Sue about retirement.
He's like 6 years into his NBA career at that point.
That is true. This is part of why everyone always is asking Sue about her retirement, even though she like pushed back on that on the first day of training camp. But at the same time, like, she was an extremely effective player last season. She's had surgeries and come back from them past. Like,
how old was she?
Younger.
I'm trying.
I mean, people thought that, you know what? People thought this though in 2013.
Like, that was 6 years ago.
Yeah, but she was.
You know how old I was in 2013? I was in my 20s.
You were no beard years ago.
Vibrant. I had 0 out of 10 children at that point.
No, you still had one child at that point.
That math doesn't check out. it's a different climate.
So you're gonna
for an early 30-year-old versus a late 30-year-old. As a late 30-year-old, I can speak to this.
Wait, are you a late 30-year-old?
No.
Okay. Not even after your birthday.
God.
Baby Fantasy Genius, I'm very excited to celebrate his apparently 5th birthday last month.
You know that this is true, though.
There's certainly a chance of it, but I don't know why we just immediately lump to that being the default assumption.
How many athletes at the age of 39 do you know that are successful, aside from Tom Brady?
How many athletes do you know that are successful at the age of 37? Because guess what? Your odds of being successful at 39 are a lot higher if you're successful at 37.
Coming off a year of injury, like...
But I don't know why this, like, the fact that it's a whole year makes a difference if it's 8 weeks versus a full year. Like, the decision is not going to be made.
It's not playing for a full year. Are you joking? You don't think you get rusty from not playing for a full year?
You can still practice.
There's a difference. You know that there's a difference. Are you kidding me?
No, I don't agree.
Give me
that
an example. Give me an example.
I'm sorry. One. I don't have a database off the top of my head.
That is all that you have off the top of your head.
Just don't know why you're trying to shovel dirt on Sue here.
I'm not trying to shovel dirt on Sue here. I'm trying to say this is not a great situation.
No, obviously it's not ideal. Hey, you know what else is not a great situation? The head coach having cancer and the star player having a ruptured Achilles. None of it is a great situation. Or playing 6 games in Everett. None of it.
Playing 6 games in Everett. Oh, boy. Anyway, maybe those Silver Tips fans will be there.
I mean, I'm told the people of Everett are excited, so we'll see how many of them turn out.
Yeah. I mean, if the options are an Aqua Sox game or to go to this, they would choose a Storm game.
So Seahawks.
I don't know why you're getting angry at me for saying that it's not a good situation for Sue Bird at 39.
Because that's not what you're saying. Sue Bird is finished. That's what you're saying.
Well, look, I speak truth to power over here. How old is she again?
38.
She's 38 at this moment.
Yes.
By the time, if she were to take the year off, she would be 39 next year. Yes. Do you realistically think that she's going to have another good WNBA season in her?
I don't know. She's already dramatically defied my expectations. She was better at age 37 than she was in her mid-20s. I don't know what got into you today. Try to make one time.
Okay. But you are too close to the situation. Are you joking? You really think that Sue Bird is going to be a competitive WNBA player at 39 years old?
Maybe.
We have to talk in percentage chances here, though.
I mean, did you think that she was going to be an effective WNBA player this year at age 38?
She didn't miss the previous year. You don't think that matters at all?
I think it matters to some extent, but I don't think it matters as much as you're making it out to.
Okay, fine. Fuck, the Storm will win the championship next year. God. Just recognize when it's over.
Guess we're not doing nuance in this podcast anymore.
This is nuance! I'm telling you, if your nuance is that you think your 39-year-old point guard is going to bounce back and
in a vacuum, you say, hey, oh, well, you're going to win a championship with a 37-year-old point guard who has to miss games due to rest?
No, they won a championship with Breonna Stewart. They didn't win a championship with a 37-year-old point guard. Oh. They had the best player in the fucking WNBA. Are you kidding me?
Did she
retire? Okay, so next year...
You think Breonna Stewart's not going to come back?
She's also coming off a year of injury.
Remind me, who had the big game in Game 5 against Phoenix? Who led them in the fourth quarter?
Oh, yeah. Sue Bird had one good game, therefore the entire season was perfect.
Glad we have a WNBA expert here on the pod.
I'm just saying, you are, like, I can't believe how rosy you are about this Storm situation when it's clearly fucked.
Should they move the franchise to New Orleans? I don't know.
We're fighting about this like I care. But I'm just telling you, this is not set up to be a good long-term situation. Breonna Stewart will probably bounce back, but Sue Bird will not be there alongside her.
Wouldn't bet against it.
God.
So Seahawks.
This is maybe our... offline contentiousness continuing.
Bobby Wagner is attending OTAs, but will not practice until his extension is complete.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Do you think he's going to be able to come back from missing this time?
Oh, my God.
I would say all signs are positive on the extension.
You think Doug
front.
Baldwin's going to have a monster year next year? Just... Whew. You're so mad when people make fun of you.
I'm not mad when people make fun of me. I'm mad when people...
God, I wish Katie was here.
Act so self-righteous.
I'm not self-righteous. Okay, anyway. Bobby Wagner.
Jaron Reed, who had surgery for a sports hernia, and Bradley Dougald, who had knee surgery, are not practicing and not expected back before training camp. Well, Chris Carson will miss the next couple of weeks due to having some work done in his knee. Also, Pete Carroll said the Seahawks are, quote, shooting for Ziggy Ansah to play in week one. So
there we go. I mean, none of this matters. You're so mad at me over here. Okay, anyway, this is all fine. Whatever.
No.
We don't care about players missing time around this time of year. Bobby Wagner does not need to be in these OTAs. He's maybe the most competent defensive player in the entire NFL. He does not need to be in these OTAs.
It's probably true.
He'll be fine.
All right, let's wrap up with our Husky section. We start with softball, which beat Fordham 2-0 in Mississippi State twice by a combined 14-1 score to win the regional last weekend. Playing through her the no-hitter to complete the series on Sunday, she faced the minimum number of batters in that game with just one walk, ruining an otherwise perfect game. Over the weekend, the Huskies got three home runs from Morgan Flores. Now they will move on to host number 14 seed Kentucky in the Super Regionals starting this Friday at Husky Softball Stadium. The Huskies beat the Cats 4-2 in the Mary Nutter Classic in February, with Taryn Elvello going nearly the distance in the win. Plane came in to get the last out for the save.
Okay, so explain to me how this works.
So now it's down in the regionals, you have four teams, and it's double elimination. Now it's just a head-to-head series, best two out of three.
How many teams are there overall, though?
16.
Okay, so this is the Sweet 16.
Yes, with the top eight teams advancing to the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City next week.
There are four teams in Seattle. Two of them will move on.
No.
Only just, one will move on.
Just the Huskies in Kentucky are in Seattle.
Oh, okay.
There's eight sites for the Super Regionals.
Okay, so and it's a best out of five series.
Best of three.
Oh, okay.
Are you intentionally doing this? I literally just said best of three.
I think when you said best of three, I heard that as you need three games to win.
I see.
Okay, so, I mean, not a lot of games, but they'll be in Seattle, and they have some of the best pitching in the country.
Yeah, I mean, Plain and Elvello have just been crushing it lately, both of them. Yeah, so, I mean, they allowed a combined one run all weekend last week.
All right.
And it should be a good crowd. It was on the website, and they're already sold out Saturday.
Okay.
Limited tickets available. Standing room only available on Friday night.
Friday night.
Yeah. Do you want to go?
I want to go. I'm looking right now.
There's no basketball game.
GoHuskies.com?
Yeah.
I'm looking right now. That'd be fun.
All right. Well, you're looking. Let's talk about, you know who's returning to the rundown? You know who made it back?
Who's that?
Husky baseball made it
there
back.
There we go.
By getting swept last weekend.
Oh.
At number one UCLA. By the way, UCLA really good at baseball and softball. Not so good at men's basketball, but really good at those.
I'm going to give it to them. They can have it.
They have the number two softball team in the country and the number one baseball team.
FlowTrack.org.
Before that, the Huskies had won 11 of their last 13. And they wrap up Pac-12 play this weekend against Cal. Surely needy a sweep to keep their slim NCAA tournament hopes alive. Sweep versus 15-11 Cal would get the Huskies back to 500 in conference play. They've generally been considered on the bubble, like on the wrong side of the bubble. I saw them, according to the Baseball America projections, among the next four out for the NCAA baseball tournament, which will be revealed next Monday. So by the next time we pod, we will know whether the Husky baseball team will make it back to the NCAA tournament after last year's thrilling run.
I'm trying to figure out tickets for the softball game. And it's...
All right, maybe you should do this after the podcast.
Wait, it's a lot harder. I click on it and it says Safari can't load this page.
Let's wrap things up with UW men's basketball, which got the thrilling news on Tuesday that Jaden McDaniels is coming to UW. He waited past the late signing period and chose not to sign a letter of intent, instead just signed a financial aid agreement with the Huskies, which doesn't bind him to the school. I mean, really, if you're a good enough prospect that you can do it, you absolutely should not sign a letter of intent, which limits your options in the unlikely case of a coaching change. I mean, obviously, not as big a factor in the late signing period, or, you know, some other last minute event that changes your mind.
You want to go? Stay near Molly?
Yeah.
How many tickets?
Yeah, let's do it. I don't know. How many of your 10 to 15 children are you bringing?
6 o'clock on Friday. I might bring all of them. I don't know. How old do they have to be to get tickets?
I don't know. Probably the youngest one does not need a ticket.
They can't go. I think just you and me should go.
Okay.
All right. I'll talk to Kelly about it. I'll wake her up. It's only 12:30 a.m.
McDaniels, the number 7 rated overall prospect by ESPN Recruiting Nation.
Where does Isaiah Stewart rank right now?
I want to say number 2, but that's just off the top of my head. Huskies, I believe the only player team with 2 of the top 7. So they're doing very well on the recruiting front, suffice it to say.
Okay, so a couple of questions about Jaden McDaniels. I guess, first off...
Stewart is number 3, by the way, behind James Wiseman, who's going to Memphis, and Cole Anthony is going to North Carolina.
Memphis, North Carolina, and University of Washington.
I mean, Memphis has the best recruiting class in the country.
That is Shouts wild. To Penny Hardaway. Well, congrats to Penny Hardaway, right? We should be toasting to him. Isaiah Stewart is locked in.
Yes.
100%.
Yes. He has signed his letter of intent.
Jaden McDaniels... How confident do we feel that he's actually coming to UW at this point?
I mean, players can and have changed their minds. We obviously experienced that with Terrence Jones going through the signing, you know, the process of choosing a school and then subsequently changing his mind because he had not yet signed a letter of intent in that case. But, I mean, if McDaniels had any doubts about where he was going to choose, I don't know why he would have announced a choice. Like, I don't know what's going to change at the other schools.
The scuttle was that he wanted to play for Juwan Howard.
Yes.
Because he loved the Fab Five.
I thought there was some sort of, like, a relation or something. Was that...
He loved the early 2000s Wizards.
Okay. Just a big fan of the Miami Heat coaching staff.
That's really the only concern, though.
Oh, he loved that 1 year that Juwan Howard spent with the Blazers.
Wow.
I had almost forgotten about that until just now.
The 1 year of Juwan Howard with the Blazers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge. Did you read the Jailblazer story by Corbin?
I did.
Somehow that's like my history now.
Lifelong Blazers fan.
The future is complicated. Okay, so let's just... operate under the assumption that Jaden McDaniels is coming to UW.
I don't see any reason not to do that.
Terrence Jones made... I feel like if it weren't for Terrence Jones, we wouldn't operate in this way.
Yes.
Because of Terrence Jones, I think we operate in a way where we're nervous until they're on campus.
Yes.
But let's assume that Jaden McDaniels will be playing at UW next season alongside Isaiah Stewart. What does this Husky basketball team look like in the 2019-2020 season?
So my expectation for the starting lineup, and again, we're working under the assumption that Jalen Noel will stay in the draft, is he's been very clear about throughout this entire process. So in the backcourt, you'd have Quade Green, the transfer from Kentucky, and Nas Carter.
And when do we expect Quade Green to be able to be playing? Are we expecting him immediately at the beginning of the year or starting Pac-12 play or what?
There's some talk that he may be eligible. He may get a waiver to be eligible at the beginning of the season. Otherwise, he would be eligible at the quarter break, which would be a little bit before Pac-12 play. He'd have the opportunity to play in the Diamond Head Classic, which the Huskies are playing in next year in Honolulu.
Okay.
At forward, you know, there's some flexibility here. Hamir Wright could get in the mix, but I would expect that Jamal Bey, who saw a lot of playing time down the stretch, and McDaniels would be your starting forwards with Isaiah Stewart at center, backed up by Sam Timmons and Brian Penn-Johnson. And the backups would also include incoming recruits Marcus Sahonis and Raekwon Battle, and then last year's freshmen Elijah Hardy and Nate Roberts.
So, okay, tell me this team where you have a couple of superstars, and really, like, let's say with Quade Green, probably, he's sort of on the fringe of that, right?
I mean, I don't know if I would say on the fringe of superstar, but
the way that he was recruited is not that far off from Jay McDaniels and Isaiah Stewart.
Yeah, that's fair.
His on the court play may not have translated to that, but like the way that Quadi Green was recruited, he was a star player.
Yes.
And because we don't know Isaiah Stewart and Jaden McDaniels as college basketball players.
No. And I mean, I think the one concern, like, you know, people are starting to talk about Final Four. Like,
who are these people?
I think there may have some references in the Seattle Times to that. This reminds me a little bit more than last year's team of a Lorenzo Romar team in terms of, you know, being built around one and done players without a ton of experience. I mean, the only senior you're going to have on the roster at this point is Sam Timmons. You do have, you know, more experience in the backcourt with juniors and Quade Green and Naz Carter, but, you know, losing Jalen Noel.
Quade Green's still new to the team, though.
Yes.
Look, if Jalen was coming back, I'd probably feel a little bit different about this team, but Final Four is a ridiculous expectation. Does this team begin the year in the top 25?
I think probably so, given the excitement around McDaniels and Stewart.
Am I naysaying too hard here by saying that if you were to give me percentage chances of making the NCAA tournament, I feel like they're less than 50%.
Yeah, that's pretty naysaying. I definitely think they're better than 50%. I mean, so now the optimistic view of this here is, number one, the reason that those late-era Romar teams struggled was largely because of their defense. And as we've talked about in the past, Mike Hopkins' zone, largely because of Matisse Thybulle, has been effective the last 2 years without the kind of athleticism and length that Syracuse traditionally has had in the front court and that you would want in a 2-3 zone. Well, hello, Isaiah Stewart and Jaden McDaniels,
yes,
who supply precisely those things.
But you're losing a Matisse Thybulle. You're losing the best defensive player in the country.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're probably not going to be as good defensively as they
were
last
year. You're losing the Pac-12 player of the year and the best player in the country.
I do think they have the potential to be better offensively than they were last year. I mean, it's going to take some doing, but Quade Green gives them a playmaking element that they just really didn't have last year with David Crisp and Jalen Noel. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see how effective McDaniels can be offensively right away. I would say that, you know, my description of it from the times that I've watched Jaden McDaniels watching on TV when he played in the HoopHall Classic and then in person when he practiced against the USA team in the Nike Hoop Summit last month, he's still growing into his game.
Yeah.
He's really trying to create a lot of offense one-on-one, play with the ball in his hands, and he just doesn't have quite a tight enough handle to do that yet or enough skill as a shooter. Could he get there? Possibly next season. I think it's more likely, you know, 5 years down the road, he's kind of figured that out than it is next season.
And that means he's 4 years into the NBA.
Yes.
Like 5 years down the road, he's not a Husky basketball player. No. Obviously.
No.
But like, he's not redshirting. But like,
but Isaiah Stewart, I think, can be really effective right away. He's got a good post game. He's got some mid-range skill.
Okay. How many big men in college have you found to be impact players, especially non like jump shooting big men, have you found to be impact players as freshmen? I'm being honest here. Like I want to be real about this.
Yeah, you're a lot of honesty today.
No, I'm saying that like I'm excited about these players coming to UW, but we're not talking about superstar guards.
I mean, I can't think of it.
And I think it's a difference.
I struggle to think of this off the top of my head because again, this is not something I've thought
mean
about.
Zion is a big man who is good.
But like the post-up can still be very effective in college basketball, especially if you're someone who can shoot free throws when you get to the free throw line, which he can. Like that's what we saw with Noah Dickerson the last few years.
Isaiah Stewart can shoot free throws?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen him shoot free throws, you know, at two practices in a game in my life.
I would describe myself as cautiously optimistic about this team.
No, you're very pessimistic about this team. Like everyone else is way more excited about this team than you
okay.
are.
Okay, everybody else needs to chill the fuck out. Because we are talking about freshmen here. Like, there is no... I would rather have... If you told me we could have this team that the Huskies have coming in or the team they had coming into the season, give me this season's team 100 times out of 100. You're talking about an experienced Matisse Thybulle and Jalen Noel and Noah Dickerson or freshmen?
Like, not just freshmen. You've got some perimeter starters who have some experience.
I mean, like, Naz Carter, but beyond then?
I think you're downplaying Quade Green's experience. I mean, yes, he's new to the system, but he was practicing with the team throughout the second half of last year.
I think he's played NCAA basketball games. Here's what matters. I have watched a lot of basketball, and what matters is shooting. And who's the shooter on this team? Who? Can Jamal Bey shoot? Can Naz Carter shoot? They have no perimeter shooting.
Quade Green should be a good shooter. I mean,
but he's the point guard.
Yes.
Like, who's Quade Green dishing off to? Are they double teaming one of the big men in the post and he's kicking it out?
Or, you know, maybe Naz Carter is playing with the ball in his hands and Quade Green is spotty up in that scenario.
Can you visualize it, is what I'm saying. Can you visualize this being a good shooting team?
I can visualize them being an okay shooting team.
Okay. I don't know. I just like the makeup of it. I'm excited about Isaiah Stewart and Jaden McDaniels, but I'd be a lot more excited about two superstar shooting guards, like a superstar shooting guard and a small forward.
I really am. Sohonis is also a very good shooter. I mean, who knows how long he'll be able to stay on the court, but I really was not anticipating that I was going to come into this podcast being the optimist on Husky basketball.
It's just an experience issue. We've seen this a lot of times. Like, I'm jaded here, maybe because of the Romar era that we have not seen. Like, I believe in experience in college basketball more than anything.
Yeah.
And we haven't seen...
not like inexperienced teams don't make the NCAA tournament.
And like, maybe this is that team. You know, maybe the talent is so high that they are Kentucky or whatever.
And maybe the defensive coaching is that strong. I mean, that's what really the key is. Like, if you look at, you know, to me, the formula when John Calipari really had it going at Kentucky, those teams weren't very good offensively. Like, they were good in transition often because they had so much athleticism, but they weren't very good in the half court. They won because they were really, really good defensively, because he took all these, you know, guys and got them to buy in defensively and had a strong scheme.
I'm just a little bit skeptical that this is that. Like, when you look at the talent, overall talent.
I mean, if you granted, think of, McDaniels is
very highly recruited players on this team, but if you look at overall talent for the team and not just the highest end, they don't compare to the best Kentucky teams.
No, obviously not. But if you think about, like, Jaden McDaniels is, you know, what, 6'10", extremely long arms, him flying out at shooters in the zone. Like, that's something they haven't had.
I think this will be a good team. If you told me, though, like, Duke this year had a lot of talent, right? Had one, you said earlier, maybe the best college player we've seen in a decade. That team.
I said the most exciting college player we've seen.
That team didn't have shooting, and they didn't make it out of the Sweet 16 or whatever, right?
Okay, yeah. If the Huskies make it to the they made it to the Elite Eight, didn't they?
And then lost. Okay, great.
Yeah, if the Huskies make it to the Elite Eight, believe me, I'm throwing a party.
Duke's overall level of talent was so much higher than the Huskies' overall level of talent.
I'm not saying that should be the
expectation. I'm just saying, like, people are getting ahead of themselves here.
Well, that doesn't sound like people.
I thought this would be the pervasive perspective. I didn't realize that this was a contrarian perspective. This is an inexperienced team. Who are the experienced players on this team? Naz Carter and
Quade Green.
Quade Green is not an experienced player.
He is.
He has not played a single game for the Huskies.
Okay, that's great.
He played 1 year at Kentucky.
He played 9 games last season as well. That's why he's not eligible until the quarter break.
He played 9 games at Kentucky last year?
Yes.
He's played 0 games in this system. Like, I cannot look at Quade Green.
He's played the Sweet 16 game, which is something that no one else in the roster can say.
Big fucking deal. Like,
what? That's a big deal?
He played 25 minutes
in a Sweet 16 game. That's a bigger level than the Huskies have ever... I don't... What? So, like, when the Blazers got Enes Kanter, did you think he was a rookie?
I didn't see Enes Kanter doing too much in the Western Conference Finals. Look, let me just say that Myers Leonard and Zach Collins were more important in the Western Conference Finals than Enes Kanter was. Am I wrong?
I don't even know what to say to this anymore.
Is that wrong? The steadying factor in the Western Conference Finals, them getting swept, was Enes Kanter?
Okay, the first two rounds also happened. I think that Enes Kanter is a particularly poor matchup for the Golden State Warriors.
Enes Kanter had a nice first round. You're making me hate on my own Blazers? God. I don't know. I'm just like,
who's the neutral now?
If we are in the middle of May, the Huskies have a very good recruiting class. This is exciting. But we've seen very good recruiting classes translate to nothing. If you offered me an experienced team with like pretty good recruited players who are experienced or super highly rated players in their freshman season, I'm always taking the experienced players. That's what college basketball is about.
As you know, no one loves Lorenzo Omar more than I do, except for maybe the listener. I think that the coaching on this year's team will be stronger than on those teams.
Wow.
And I think that that will probably be a key difference between this year's team and those teams.
Wow. So you're saying, if we're to summarize Kevin Pelton from ESPN's perspective here, the difference between this Husky team and previous Husky teams, which have featured lottery picks, the number one pick in the draft, is that the coaching is better on this team than any Lorenzo Omar team?
No, not any Lorenzo Omar team, because I think the coaching was very strong on Lorenzo Omar teams before the rules changed limiting hand checking on the perimeter.
Wow.
And I don't know. Subsequent to that, I do not think the coaching was as strong.
I want to be wrong so badly, but I'm nervous going into this year.
And you're nervous about a lot of stuff, apparently.
I can't believe I'm the like extreme naysayer over here.
Real change of went to Chicago and we both changed roles.
I just don't like love a big man.
I disagree with this perspective. I do not see that college big men are unimpactful.
I'm fired up about Jaden McDaniels. I'm excited about Jaden McDaniels. This is going to be a fun year no matter what. But I just see it as being a Pac-12 basketball year. It's going to be a struggle. Best case scenario, they make the tournament.
Best case scenario, they make it to the tournament.
Like, realistically,
a team that I told you is going to be ranked in the top 25 going into the season.
Okay, the previous season that we just experienced, they were ranked in the top 25.
They made the NCAA tournament, didn't they?
And they made the NCAA tournament. That was it.
They won a game. They didn't just make the NCAA tournament.
They won a game.
So the Huskies will have an opportunity to get a little more experience with this new core with a summer trip to Italy that they announced earlier this week. College programs are allowed to make one trip overseas each 4 years. The team went to Australia and New Zealand in 2016 to play, going to Sam Timmins' homeland and to Spain, France, Monaco, and Senegal. Senegal notably being the home of, at that point, it wasn't Aziz Ndiaye at that point. It was Malik Dime. In 2012. Yeah. So that'll be good. Should we talk about the combine at all?
Sure.
So Jalen Noel played in the games both days.
How do you look?
He looked reasonably good.
You be the hater for 1 second?
I mean, I said it was worse than 50-50 he'd get drafted.
He's getting drafted.
So the first day he didn't really knock down the three, but was very good inside the arc. Second day started, came out and knocked down two threes right away. Was kind of quiet in the second half of that game. Talked to him briefly after the first day and asked him what he was looking to show scouts at the combine. And he said, number one, that he was more athletic than they thought.
And that ESPN's Kevin Pelton is wrong.
which I did talk to, you know, some people. His athletic testing numbers were quite strong. Nice. And one person who works for a team did specifically say, it seems like he's more athletic than I realized watching him play.
Interesting.
And then the other thing he said he wanted to prove is that he could defend one-on-one in a, you know, play man-to-man after playing the zone defender for Hopkins. I do not think he was this impressive on that kind of museums.
You had to get some hate in there somewhere.
I'm the one who's
been hating on this team, but you had to work some hate in.
My conclusion remains that he's going to be on a two-way contract next year. I don't know like whether he will agree to that with the team ahead of time, in which case he gets drafted in probably the last 10 picks, or if he, you know, goes undrafted and signs that with the team afterwards.
He's getting drafted.
I mean, he might. It's just, it depends whether he finds a team that he wants to agree to a two-way contract with. That's the scenario where he gets drafted in almost all likelihood.
Okay. What about Matisse? Was Matisse at the combine?
No, he declined the invite. Is what we discussed last week on the podcast.
So what was the scuttle when you were at the combine?
I heard a lot of different teams is the idea that who might have promised him. I also heard the idea that maybe he didn't get promised at all, but his management just wants teams to think that there's a promise. And that like he's that his
stock is that value. I don't know if that's a good look.
But the number one team I heard as a potential promiser was, of course, the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Just because they promised you doesn't mean that they're going to be the team who selects you. What pick do they hold?
21st.
You think it would be unlikely for him to go ahead of that?
I think it would be very unlikely for him to go ahead of
that. Okay, so that puts a bullseye in the 20th pick, though. Right? Once you get past...
For like teams trying to trade up?
Yeah. Picks, I mean, like 15 through 20 can be had by almost any team, right?
Sure.
Like, they're not hard picks to get to. Do we agree with this?
I mean, it depends where you're starting, but okay.
But in the NBA draft, picks 15 through 20 can be traded for.
Sure.
If you want to put any sort of capital toward it.
Number 20, currently the Boston Celtics. That will be their second of three picks.
It unheard of for the Celtics to take Matisse Thybulle?
No.
But it means that a lot of teams, if they do think that Oklahoma City has a promise to Matisse, they know whomever the team is that they need to get to 20.
Yes.
And I think that there are teams who can get there. If somebody becomes enamored with him or even is interested in him, like investing a 15th through 20th pick in Matisse Thybulle is not that huge of an investment. Right? This is not a lottery pick here.
No, but it's pretty high for him to be going, all things considered, I think.
Do we? Like,
he wasn't a lock to be a first-round pick all year. And now we're talking, you know, closer to the middle of the first round than the end of the first round. So, I mean, that would be a very good outcome for Matisse Thybulle, were it the case. Him going to the Thunder would be an outcome for Matisse Thybulle.
God, he's such a Thunder player, though.
I mean, that is the one question, is they already have Terrence Ferguson and the aforementioned much-beloved Andre Robertson as wing defenders.
Do they really Andre Robertson's different in that? Than Tease, though.
Well, he's just...
He's bigger.
I mean, the thing about Andre Robertson is he just sat out an entire year to an injury, so apparently he's never going to play basketball.
Okay,
again.
Is Andre Robertson 39? Look, I'm sorry, but... do I have to explain basketball to you, of all people? I'm the one who's over here arguing any sort of history ever, and you're just like, people defy odds all the time. I mean, Brady could play till he's 50.
I just don't even know what the odds are. You're citing a history based on your imagined perception of things.
I'm citing... You cannot name another person. You literally cannot name a player. I mean, and I'm the one who's making shit up?
Which player have you named that retired at age 38?
I'm naming every single basketball player that has ever existed.
No, but again, you can't start with that pool.
When did Tony Parker retire?
I mean, that's a question for Tony Parker. He played last season, so...
How old is he?
I guess that's a basketball player.
He retired the moment he went to Charlotte, New Orleans?
He went to Charlotte. he, by the way, is the owner of one of those two teams playing in the French women's final.
Oh, nice.
Thursday.
Tony Parker is.
Yeah, Alicia Clark plays for his team. Tony Parker is currently 37 years old.
Okay, Tony Parker is 37 and he feels like he's 50.
I mean, I don't...
Do you remember? He was very young when he came into the league.
He was.
But?
He entered the NBA before Sue Bird entered the WNBA.
Do you think that Tony Parker is going to play? If Tony Parker, in 2 years, if he plays next season and then is injured for the season after that, do you think that he's going to be a viable NBA player after that?
Remind me, was
he a viable NBA player this year?
Well, no, but he was an NBA player.
I'm not saying that Sue Bird will have to retire. I mean, I'm saying that she's not going to. Why do I have to be the anti-Sue Bird person?
Tony Parker hasn't been good for a long time. I don't know if you're aware of this. I mean,
it's a unique situation because they're not.
You can't say the entire pool of all NBA players or WNBA players, because most NBA and WNBA players don't make it to 37
That's
in the first
place. That's what I'm saying. It's like there have not been that many good players at 37. Maybe Sue Bird will be able to bounce back. Maybe she'll be the one. I don't know. But I'm saying that if we're talking percentage chances wise, it feels slimmer.
What is your percentage chance of it?
Of what? Of her being an all-star caliber player at 39?
All-star is strong. Let's say that she starts more than 17 games in the 2020 season.
25%.
I mean, I don't know if I would put it that much higher than that. I just, I think talking very pessimistically about that. I mean, I would say it's probably 50-50. I mean, she could come back as a backup to Jordan Canada if Canada establishes herself as the starter.
Sue Bird comes in and plays the season if she's backup to Jordan Canada.
She still enjoys playing basketball.
If that were the case, that would be her last season as a professional basketball player.
Probably, but I don't want to speak for Sue. Everybody chooses to go out on their own on different terms. Including us with this podcast.
I'd rather burn out than fade away.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks. You've been in the house for a long time.
I didn't see your face. You were just on the couch.
You can't see my face on the couch.
I mean, I wasn't walking through directly through the living room.
It takes a second, but you'll get used to it.
Are you 25 now?
Maybe it's because my birthday is coming up. I felt like I had to look younger. I had to revert back 10 years.
I don't like it.
I don't like it. I was shaving and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to grow out like a really thick mustache.
I can't tell. I think you look more like Leo Messi now, though.
Really?
Yeah, which is weird because he often has a beard. But for some reason, you look more like Leo Messi without a beard. Maybe because yours wasn't as unkempt as his.
He goes back and forth.
Yeah.
I look more like Leo Messi now. It's definitely...
It's the main criteria I go by.
I'm like the first like day of looking at myself. I mean, I had a beard for 5 years.
How long have I had a beard?
I don't know.
Tell me how long I've had a beard.
The last time I shaved my beard.
You've had a beard longer than I have because I haven't had my beard for 5 years, I don't think.
I had a beard before you.
Interesting. Because
I had a full-time beard before you.
I'm pretty sure I grew it after Summer League 2014. In a classic example of related all things in my life to sporting events.
But... Okay, so I had a beard for a long time. I started like adult fully grown beard in like... What year did we go to Hawaii? That was 2000. That was 2014.
That was also 2014.
I started having a full-grown beard like summer, probably 2013. Uh-huh. And then I shaved it like right before Marco was born, around that time period. You remember there's that Vera party at the Columbia Tower Club?
I do remember that.
Second time.
Is that the one where there were the photos of us with Rainiers?
No. But I didn't have a beard then either.
Yes.
So it was after that. But there was another party, another Vera party after I left, because I still worked there in that Rainier photo.
Oh, gotcha.
There was another party the next year.
Yes, Marcin Gortat got traded to the Wizards.
On the following party or the first one?
Following party.
And were you there for that second one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I came after I wrote my Marcin Gortat trade.
I didn't have a beard then because I'd shaved it randomly. So like when Marco was born, the photo that I have of me when he's born, I don't have a beard.
Yeah.
But I did have one for like the year before then, and then he was born, and then I've had a beard.
And then everything went south since then. Immediately.
He's like a fully grown child, and I had a beard his entire life.
Yeah. Huh? Well, there you go. That's quite an adjustment for him.
They were shocked.
I can imagine.
It was weird. I'm thinking about going no beard for a while. I mean, it's weird because you think about these things, and you're like, I thought I would have a beard forever for the rest of my life.
I mean... It's weird because like I grew a beard in the spring of 2005 and I shaved it off at one point, but I had it most of between then and
2005. I remember that.
Yeah.
That was when you were fat.
Yes. It covered a lot of it. It's really quite helpful. I really recommend, growing
a beard. I'm getting skinnier without a beard though.
What?
Like I'm skinnier now than I was say 6 months ago.
Gotcha. But you're not skinnier because you got rid of the beard. That would be quite remarkable.
I'm younger because I don't have the beard.
Anyway, I think I had it for the next year. I think I shaved it off around Memorial Day 2006.
I just remember there's the photo with the cranium character on your shoulder when you said that was the low point of your life.
It's my fat Elvis photo.
That's when you hit rock bottom.
now we're gonna have to post this photo, are we?
Are we? No, we don't have to. Nobody listens to this part at the end.
No, at least are we at the end?
I feel like these are the closest to our actual conversations.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
100%.
Oh God, fucking Jan calling me.
Oh, yes, the Canadian photo. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you have to post that.
Okay. If you say so.
I mean, it's up to you if you want to. I have all that stuff locked down.
We'll see if there's any demand for it.
A lot of my old Facebook is only visible to me.
And I once emailed that to one of my closest friends, and her only reply was, "Why were you so fat?"
Calzones.
Well,
why were you so fat?
I mean, I think it was a rhetorical. I don't think she was looking for like an actual exposition about it.
Kelly Maeda?
Yeah.
Why were you so fat? That's really funny. It's like calzones, burgers, just general lifestyle.
Lack of exercise, limited sleep. There were many factors.
You think limited sleep has something to do with it?
All right, that probably was low on the list.
I think it was more the calzones. They're football size.
I haven't had one of those in a while. We're going to have to discuss that
Varlamis, someday. When we do Seattle's best calzone, summer 2029. We're going to go to a Sonics game and talk about the best calzones in Seattle.
Oh, God willing. Do we have anything else to do on this?
This is not supposed to be official.
I'm just asking. Are we done?
Are we going to talk about... the draft lottery.
No.
A lot of people tweeted about that. At least briefly.
Fine, we can bring it up.
Okay. All right, I'm ready to go.
Don't move the mic too much.
Don't move your mom too much.
I mean, I would love to move her away.
All right, that's where I should end. That was the longest hidden track ever. It's just more podcast.